Robin. "I don't think it's all me." "I saw one once," said Piglet. "At least I think I did," he said. "Only perhaps it wasn't."
"So did I," said Pooh, wondering what a heffalump was like. "You don't often see them," said Christopher Robin carelessly.
"Not now," said Piglet.
"Not at this time of year," said Pooh.
That's what a heffalump is. So Pooh and Piglet decided to capture one. The plan started out well. Pooh's first idea was that they should dig a very deep pit, and then the heffalump would come along and fall into the pit, and...
"Why?"
said Piglet.
"Why what?"
said Pooh.
"Why would he fall in?"
Pooh rubbed his nose with his paw, and said that the heffalump might be walking along, humming a little song, and looking up at the sky, wondering if it would rain, and so he wouldn't see the very deep pit until he was halfway down, when it would be too late. Piglet said that this was a very good trap, but supposing it were raining already? Pooh rubbed his nose again, and said that he hadn't thought of that, and then he brightened up and said that if it were raining already, the heffalump would be looking at the sky wondering if it would clear up, and so he wouldn't see the very deep pit until he was halfway down, when it would be too late. Piglet said that, now that this point had been explained, he thought it was a cunning trap. Pooh was very proud when he heard this, and he felt that the heffalump was as good as caught already. But there was just one other thing which had to be thought about, and it was this. Where should they dig the very deep pit? Piglet said that the best place would be somewhere where a heffalump was, just before he fell into it. Only about a foot farther on.
"But then he would see us digging it," said Pooh.
"Not if he was looking at the sky."
It sounds easy, doesn't it? Let's see. First, you dig a hole, making sure that it's big enough for a heffalump. And the best way to make sure that the heffalump gets into the trap once you've made it is to put something that heffalumps like into it, such as a bag of peanuts or...
"Honey," said Pooh.
"Honey?"
"A jar of honey," said Pooh.
"Are you sure?"
"A big jar of honey," Pooh insisted.
Whoever heard of heffalumps liking honey? Sticky, gooey. How would they ever...
"The best thing," said Pooh.
All right. Honey. You put the honey in the trap, and before you know it, you've caught a... Something went wrong. That's not a heffalump. But what is it? Maybe Piglet will find out when he goes to see what's in the trap.
"Help! Help!" cried Piglet. "A heffalump! A horrible heffalump!"
And he scampered off as hard as he could, still crying out.
"Help! Help! A horrible hoverlump! Hoff, hoff, a hellable horrorlump! Ho, ho, a hoffable hellerump!"
And he didn't stop crying and scampering until he got to Christopher Robin's house.
"Whatever's the matter, Piglet?" said Christopher Robin, who was just getting up.
"Heff,"
said Piglet, breathing so hard that he could hardly speak.
"A hell! A heff! A heffalump!"
"Where?"
"Up there,"
said Piglet, waving his paw.
"What did it look like?"
Like, it had the biggest head you ever saw, Christopher Robin. A great enormous thing, like nothing. A huge big, well, like a, I don't know, like an enormous big nothing. Like a jar."
So the honey wasn't such a good thing to use after all. We didn't think that it really matched the nature of heffalumps, somehow. Now that we know the principle, we can... Oh, that's you, Pooh.
"Muffle, waffle, Cottleston pie, muffle, waffle."
"I beg your pardon?"
"Tell them about Cottleston pie. What it means,"
Pooh whispered, a little more clearly. "I just did," I said.
"I mean, tell them what it stands for," said Pooh expectantly.
"Oh, of course. Thank you, Pooh." Pooh wants us to know that the words Cottleston pie are a way of saying inner nature. So, by substituting that term for the last line in each verse of the song, we get, "Ask me a riddle and I reply, inner nature."
"Cottleston pie sounds better," said Pooh.
"Well, how about this, Pooh? Ask me a riddle and I reply, things are as they are."
"Better? But it still doesn't rhyme."
"All right, how's this? Ask me a riddle, and I reply, Cottleston, Cottleston, Cottleston pie.
Just right, said Pooh.
Now that we know the principle, we can look at its applications. As we have likely recognized by now, no two snowflakes, trees, or animals are alike. No two people are the same either. Everything has its own inner nature. Unlike other forms of life, though, people are easily led away from what's right for them because people have brain, and brain can be fooled. Inner nature, when relied on, cannot be fooled. But many people do not look at it or listen to it, and consequently do not understand themselves very much. Having little understanding of themselves, they have little respect for themselves and are therefore easily influenced by others. But rather than be carried along by circumstances and manipulated by those who can see the weaknesses and behavior tendencies that we ignore, we can work with our own characteristics and be in control of our own lives. The way of self-reliance starts with recognizing who we are, what we've got to work with, and what works best for us. How would you explain it, Pooh?
With a song, he said. A little something I just made up.
Go ahead.
Certainly. How can you get very far if you don't know who you are? How can you do what you ought if you don't know what you've got? And if you don't know which to do of all the things in front of you, then what you'll have when you are through is just a mess without a clue of all the best that can come true if you know what and which and who.
That's it, he said, leaning back and closing his eyes. A masterpiece.
Well, better than average, maybe.
Sooner or later, we are bound to discover some things about ourselves that we don't like. But once we see they're there, we can decide what we want to do with them. Do we want to get rid of them completely, change them into other things, or use them in beneficial ways? The last two approaches are often especially useful since they avoid head-on conflict, and therefore minimize struggle. Also, they allow those transformed characteristics to be added to the list of things we have that help us out. In a similar manner, instead of struggling to erase what are referred to as negative emotions, we can learn to use them in positive ways. We could describe the principle like this. While pounding on the piano keys may produce noise, removing them doesn't exactly further the creation of music. The principles of music and living aren't all that different, we think. Wouldn't you say, Pooh?
Say what?
Asked Pooh, opening his eyes. Music and living.
The same thing, said Pooh.
That's what we thought. So rather than work against ourselves, all we need to do in many cases is to point our weaknesses or unpleasant tendencies in a different direction than we have been. The following incident, recorded by the philosopher Liu An, can serve to illustrate. In the state of Zhou, a housebreaker became a soldier under the general Zufa, a man known for utilizing the abilities of others to a remarkable degree. A short while later, Zhou was attacked by the army of the state of Qi. Zufa's men went out to counter the attack, but were driven back three times. The Chu strategists exhausted their minds while the enemy forces grew stronger. At that point, the housebreaker stepped forward and asked for a chance to work for the defense of Chu. The general granted his request. That night, the housebreaker sneaked into the Qi camp, entered the general's tent, and removed the curtains from the bed. Zufa sent these back the next morning by special envoy, with a note which explained that they had been found by some men who were out gathering firewood. The following evening, the housebreaker removed the Qi general's pillow. The next morning it was returned with a message like the first. On the third night, the housebreaker removed the general's jade hairpin. It was returned the next morning. That day, the Qi general called his officers together. "One more night," he warned them, "and it will be my head!" The troops were ordered to break camp and return home. So there is no such thing as an ability that is too useless, too crooked, or too small. It only depends on what you do with it. As Lao Tse pointed out, the bad can be raw material for the good. So quite often, the easiest way to get rid of a minus is to change it into a plus. Sometimes you will find that characteristics you try hard to eliminate eventually come back anyway. But if you do the right things, they will come back in the right ways. and sometimes those very tendencies that you dislike the most can show up in the right way at the right time to save your life, somehow. If that's ever happened to you, you'll think twice before setting out to completely unbounce yourself. What do we mean by unbounce yourself? Well, you remember the situation with Tigger.
"How did you fall in, Eeyore?"
asked Rabbit, as he dried him with Piglet's handkerchief.
"I didn't," said Eeyore.
"But how?"
"I was bounced," said Eeyore.
"Ooh," said Roo excitedly. "Did somebody push you?"
"Somebody bounced me. I was just thinking by the side of the river. Thinking, if any of you know what that means, when I received a loud bounce."
"Oh, Eeyore," said everybody.
"Are you sure you didn't slip?" asked Rabbit wisely.
"Of course I slipped. If you're standing on the slippery bank of a river, and somebody bounces you loudly from behind, you slip. What did you think I did?"
"But who did it?" asked Roo.
Eeyore didn't answer.
"I expect it was Tigger," said Piglet nervously.
"But Eeyore," said Pooh, "was it a joke or an accident? I mean..."
"I didn't stop to ask, Pooh. Even at the very bottom of the river, I didn't stop to say to myself, 'Is this a hearty joke, or is it the merest accident?' I just floated to the surface and said to myself, 'It's wet,' if you know what I mean."
So, to remove the bounce from Tigger, Rabbit came up with another one of his famous plans. Rabbit, Pooh, and Piglet would take Tigger to some place at the top of the forest where he'd never been, and lose him there. And from then on, he would be a small and sorry Tigger who bounced no more. Well, so much for cleverness, as Eeyore might say, because as things turned out, Rabbit got everyone lost, including himself. Everyone but Tigger, that is. Tiggers don't get lost, it so happens, not even in the mist at the top of the forest, and that proved to be very useful. Because although Pooh and Piglet found their way back after a while...
"Where's Rabbit?"
"I don't know," said Pooh.
"Oh, well, I expect Tigger will find him. He's sort of looking for you all."
"Well," said Pooh, "I've got to go home for something, and so has Piglet, because we haven't had it yet, and..."
"I'll come and watch you," said Christopher Robin. So he went home with Pooh and watched him for quite a long time. And all the time he was watching, Tigger was tearing round the forest, making loud yapping noises for Rabbit. And at last a very small and sorry rabbit heard him. And the small and sorry rabbit rushed through the mist at the noise, and it suddenly turned into Tigger, a friendly Tigger, a grand Tigger, a large and helpful Tigger, a Tigger who bounced, if he bounced at all, in just the beautiful way a Tigger ought to bounce.
"Oh, Tigger, I am glad to see you," cried Rabbit.
In the story of the Ugly Duckling, when did the Ugly Duckling stop feeling ugly? When he realized that he was a swan. Each of us has something special, a swan of some sort hidden inside somewhere. But until we recognize that it's there, what can we do but splash around treading water? The wise are who they are. They work with what they've got and do what they can do. There are things about ourselves that we need to get rid of. There are things we need to change. But at the same time, we do not need to be too desperate, too ruthless, too combative. Along the way to usefulness and happiness, many of those things will change themselves, and the others can be worked on as we go. The first thing we need to do is recognize and trust our own inner nature, and not lose sight of it. For within the ugly duckling is the swan. Inside the bouncy Tigger is the rescuer who knows the way, and in each of us is something special, and that we need to keep. For a long time they looked at the river beneath them, saying nothing. And the river said nothing, too, for it felt very quiet and peaceful on this summer afternoon.
"Tigger is all right, really," said Piglet lazily.
"Of course he is," said Christopher Robin.
"Everybody is, really," said Pooh. "That's what I think," said Pooh. "But I don't suppose I'm right," he said.
"Of course you are," said Christopher Robin.
the Pooh Way. By the time it came to the edge of the forest, the stream had grown up, so that it was almost a river, and, being grown up, it did not run and jump and sparkle along as it used to do when it was younger, but moved more slowly, for it knew now where it was going, and it said to itself, "There is no hurry. We shall get there some day." Now we come to what could be called the most characteristic element of Taoism in action. In Chinese it is known as Wu Wei. It is also the most characteristic element of Pu in action. In English it is not known as much of anything in particular. We believe that it's time that someone noticed it and called it something. So we will call it the Pu Wei. Literally, Wu Wei means without doing, causing, or making. But practically speaking, it means without meddlesome, combative, or egotistical effort. It seems rather significant that the character Wei developed from the symbols for a clawing hand and a monkey, since the term Wu Wei means no going against the nature of things, no clever tampering, no monkeying around. The efficiency of Wu Wei is like that of water flowing over and around the rocks in its path, not the mechanical, straight-line approach that usually ends up short-circuiting natural laws, but one that evolves from an inner sensitivity to the natural rhythm of things. Let's take an example from the writings of Zhuangzi. At the Gorge of Lu, the great waterfall plunges for thousands of feet, its spray visible for miles. In the churning waters below, no living creature can be seen. One day, Kung Fuze was standing at a distance from the pool's edge, when he saw an old man being tossed about in the turbulent water. He called to his disciples, and together they ran to rescue the victim. But by the time they reached the water, the old man had climbed out onto the bank and was walking along, singing to himself. Kung Fuze hurried up to him. "You would have to be a ghost to survive that," he said, "but you seem to be a man instead. What secret power do you have?" "Nothing special," the old man replied. "I began to learn while very young, and grew up practicing it. Now I am certain of success. I go down with the water, and come up with the water. I follow it and forget myself. I survive because I don't struggle against the water's superior power. That's all." When we learn to work with our own inner nature, and with the natural laws operating around us, we reach the level of Wu Wei. Then we work with the natural order of things and operate on the principle of minimal effort. Since the natural world follows that principle, it does not make mistakes. Mistakes are made or imagined by man, the creature with the overloaded brain who separates himself from the supporting network of natural laws by interfering and trying too hard. Not like Pooh, the most effortless bear we've ever seen. "Just how do you do it, Pooh?"
"Do what?" asked Pooh.
"Become so effortless."
"I don't do much of anything," he said.
"But all those things of yours get done."
"They just sort of happen," he said.
"Wait a minute. That reminds me of something from the Tao Te Ching," I said, reaching for a book. "Here it is, chapter 37. Translated, it reads something like, Tao does not do, but nothing is not done."
"That sounds like a riddle," said Pooh.
"It means that Tao doesn't force or interfere with things, but lets them work in their own way, to produce results naturally. Then whatever needs to be done is done."
"I see," said Pooh.
In Chinese, the principle would be Wei Wu Wei, do without doing. From Wei Wu Wei comes Zhu Jian, self-so. That means that things happen by themselves, spontaneously.
"Oh, I see," said Pooh.
For a basic example of the Pooh Wei, let's recall something that happened in the house at Pooh Corner, when Pooh, Piglet, Rabbit and Roo were playing Pooh Sticks. They'd dropped their sticks off the bridge into the river and had gone to the other side to see whose stick would come out first. And they'd been waiting quite a while, when out floated Eeyore.
"Eeyore? I didn't know you were playing," said Roo.
"I'm not," said Eeyore.
"Eeyore, what are you doing there?" said Rabbit.
"I'll give you three guesses, Rabbit," Digging holes in the ground? Wrong. Leaping from branch to branch of a young oak tree? Wrong. Waiting for somebody to help me out of the river? Right. Give Rabbit time and he'll always get the answer.
Then Pooh got an idea. They could drop some stones into the river. The stones would make waves, and the waves would wash Eeyore over to the riverbank. Rabbit thought it was a good idea. Eeyore didn't.
"Supposing we hit him by mistake," said Piglet anxiously.
"Or supposing you missed him by mistake," said Eeyore. "Think of all the possibilities, Piglet, before you settle down to enjoy yourselves."
But Pooh had got the biggest stone he could carry, and was leaning over the bridge, holding it in his paws.
"I'm not throwing it. I'm dropping it, Eeyore," he explained. "And then I can't miss. I mean, I can't hit you. Could you stop turning round for a moment, because it muddles me rather?"
"No," said Eeyore. "I like turning round."
Rabbit began to feel that it was time he took command.
"Now, Pooh," he said, "when I say now, you can drop it. Eeyore, when I say now, Pooh will drop his stone."
"Thank you very much, Rabbit, but I expect I shall know."
"Are you ready, Pooh? Piglet, give Pooh a little more room. Get back a bit there, Roo. Are you ready?"
"No,"
said Eeyore.
"Now," said Rabbit.
Pooh dropped his stone. There was a loud splash, and Eeyore disappeared. It was an anxious moment for the watchers on the bridge. They looked and looked, and even the sight of Piglet's stick coming out a little in front of Rabbit's didn't cheer them up as much as you would have expected. And then, just as Pooh was beginning to think that he must have chosen the wrong stone, or the wrong river, or the wrong day for his idea, something grey showed for a moment by the riverbank, and it got slowly bigger and bigger. And at last it was Eeyore coming out. With a shout they rushed off the bridge, and pushed and pulled at him, and soon he was standing among them again on dry land.
"Oh, Eeyore, you are wet," said Piglet, feeling him.
Eeyore shook himself, and asked somebody to explain to Piglet what happened when you had been inside a river for quite a long time.
"Well done, Pooh," said Rabbit kindly. "That was a good idea of ours."
Cleverness, as usual, takes all the credit it possibly can. But it's not the clever mind that's responsible when things work out. It's the mind that sees what's in front of it and follows the nature of things. When you work with Wu Wei, you put the round peg in the round hole and the square peg in the square hole. No stress, no struggle. Egotistical desire tries to force the round peg into the square hole and the square peg into the round hole. Cleverness tries to devise craftier ways of making pegs fit where they don't belong. Knowledge tries to figure out why round pegs fit round holes, but not square holes. Wu Wei doesn't try. It doesn't think about it, it just does it. And when it doesn't appear to do much of anything. But things get done. Having trouble, Piglet?
"The lid on this jar is stuck," gasped Piglet.
"Yes, it is, isn't it? Here, Pooh, you open it." Pop.
"Thanks, Pooh," said Piglet.
"Nothing really,"
said Pooh.
"How did you get that lid off?"
asked Tigger.
"It's easy," said Pooh. "You just twist on it, like this, until you can't twist any harder. Then you take a deep breath and, as you let it out, twist. That's all."
"Let me try that," yelled Tigger, bouncing into the kitchen. "Where's that new jar of pickles? Ah, here it is."
"Tigger," began Piglet nervously, "I don't think you'd better..."
"Nothing to it," said Tigger. "Just twist and..."
Crash. "All right, Tigger," I said. "Get those pickles off the floor."
"Slipped out of my paw," explained Tigger.
"He tried too hard," said Pooh.
And when you try too hard, it doesn't work. Try grabbing something quickly and precisely with a tensed up arm, then relax and try it again. Try doing something with a tense mind. The surest way to become tense, awkward, and confused is to develop a mind that tries too hard, one that thinks too much. The animals in the forest don't think too much. They just are. But with an overwhelming number of people, to misquote an old Western philosopher, it's a case of, I think, therefore I am confused. If you compare the city with the forest, you may begin to wonder why it's man who goes around classifying himself as the superior animal.
Superior to what? Asked Pooh.
I don't know, Pooh. I try to think of something, but I just can't come up with an answer.
If people were superior to animals, they'd take better care of the world, said Pooh.
That's true, I said. But down through the centuries, man has developed a mind that separates him from the world of reality, the world of natural laws. This mind tries too hard, wears itself out, and ends up weak and sloppy. Such a mind, even if of high intelligence, is inefficient. It goes here and there, backwards and forwards, and fails to concentrate on what it's doing at the moment. It drives down the street in a fast-moving car and thinks it's at the store, going over a grocery list. Then it wonders why accidents occur. When you work with Wu Wei, you have no real accidents. Things may get a little odd at times, but they work out. You don't have to try very hard to make them work out, you just let them. For example, let's recall the search for Small. Small, which is short for very small beetle, we were told, disappeared one day on his way around a gorse bush. Nobody knew what happened. So the search was begun. And soon everyone was trying very hard to find Small. Everyone, of course, had been organized and directed by Rabbit. Everyone, of course, except for Pooh. Bump! Ow! Squeaked something.
That's funny, thought Pooh.
I said, ow, without really ooing.
Help!
Said a small, high voice.
That's me again, thought Pooh.
I've had an accident and fallen down a well, and my voice has gone all squeaky and works before I'm ready for it, because I've done something to myself inside. Bother!
Help! Help!
There you are.
I say things when I'm not trying, so it must be a very bad accident. And then he thought that perhaps when he did try to say things, he wouldn't be able to. So, to make sure, he said loudly,
A very bad accident to Pooh Bear.
Pooh!
Squeaked the voice.
It's Piglet! Cried Pooh, eagerly. Where are you?
Underneath,
said Piglet, in an underneath sort of way.
Underneath what?
Well, after that had been straightened out,
Pooh! He cried. There's something climbing up your back!
I thought there was, said Pooh.
It's Small! Cried Piglet.
Those who do things by the Pooh way find this sort of thing happening to them all the time. It's hard to explain, except by example, but it works. Things just happen in the right way, at the right time. At least they do when you let them, when you work with circumstances, instead of saying, this isn't supposed to be happening this way, and trying hard to make it happen some other way. If you're in tune with the way things work, then they work the way they need to, no matter what you may think about it at the time. Later on, you can look back and say, oh, now I understand. That had to happen so that those could happen, and those had to happen in order for this to happen. Then you realize that even if you'd tried to make it all turn out perfectly, you couldn't have done better. And if you'd really tried, you would have made a mess of the whole thing. Let's take another example of things work out. Eeyore's birthday party, as arranged by Pooh and Piglet. Pooh discovered, after Eeyore told him, that it was Eeyore's birthday. So Pooh decided to give him something. He went home to get a jar of honey to use as a birthday present, and talked things over with Piglet, who decided to give Eeyore a balloon that he'd saved from a party of his own. While Piglet went to get the balloon, Pooh walked off to Eeyore's with the jar of honey. But after a while he began to get hungry. So he sat down and took the top off his jar of honey.
"Lucky I brought this with me," he thought. "Many a bear going out on a warm day like this would never have thought of bringing a little something with him."
And he began to eat.
"Now let me see.
he thought, as he took his last lick of the inside of the jar.
Where was I going?
Ah, yes, Eeyore. He got up, slowly. And then suddenly he remembered. He had eaten Eeyore's birthday present. Well, most of it, anyway. Fortunately, he still had the jar, and since he was passing by the 100-acre wood, he went in to see Owl and had him write a happy birthday on it. After all, it was a nice jar, even with nothing in it. While all this was happening, Piglet had gone back to his own house to get Eeyore's balloon. He held it very tightly against himself so that it shouldn't blow away, and he ran as fast as he could so as to get to Eeyore before Pooh did. For he thought that he would like to be the first one to give a present, just as if he had thought of it without being told by anybody. And running along, and thinking how pleased Eeyore would be, he didn't look where he was going. And suddenly he put his foot in a rabbit hole, and fell down flat on his face. Bang! Yes, well, after Piglet fell on Eeyore's balloon, it wasn't so... Well, it was more... That is, it was...
Balloon, said Eeyore. Did you say balloon? One of those big coloured things you blow up? Gaiety, song and dance, here we are and there we are?
Yes, but I'm afraid... I'm very sorry, Eeyore, but when I was running along to bring it to you, I fell down.
Dear, dear, how unlucky. You ran too fast, I expect. You didn't hurt yourself, little piglet.
No, but Oh, Eeyore, I burst the balloon.
There was a very long silence.
My balloon, said Eeyore at last.
Piglet nodded.
My birthday balloon.
Yes, Eeyore, said Piglet, sniffing a little. Here it is, with many happy returns of the day.
And he gave Eeyore the small piece of damp rag.
Is this it?
Said Eeyore, a little surprised. Piglet nodded.
My present?
Piglet nodded again.
The balloon?
And just then Pooh arrived.
I've brought you a little present, said Pooh excitedly.
I've had it, said Eeyore.
Pooh had now splashed across the stream to Eeyore, and Piglet was sitting a little way off, his head in his paws, snuffling to himself.
It's a useful pot, said Pooh. Here it is, and it's got a very happy birthday with love from Pooh written on it. That's what all that writing is. And it's for putting things in. There.
Then Eeyore discovered that, since the balloon was no longer as big as Piglet, it could easily be put away in the useful pot, and taken out whenever it was needed, which certainly can't be done with a typical, unmanageable balloon.
"I'm very glad," said Pooh happily, "that I thought of giving you a useful pot to put things in."
"I'm very glad," said Piglet happily, "that I thought of giving you something to put in a useful pot."
But Eeyore wasn't listening. He was taking the balloon out and putting it back again, as happy as could be. So it all worked out. At its highest level, Wu Wei is indefinable and practically invisible, because it has become a reflex action. In the words of Zhuangzi, the mind of Wu Wei flows like water, reflects like a mirror, and responds like an echo. Just like Pooh.
Ahem, I say, just like Pooh.
What?
Said Pooh, waking up suddenly and falling out of the chair.
What's like who?
What flows like water, reflects like a mirror, and responds like an echo.
Oh, a riddle, said Pooh. How many guesses do I get?
Oh, I don't know. Let's just see what happens.
What could it be? He mumbled. Flows like water.
Using Wu Wei, you go by circumstances and listen to your own intuition. This isn't the best time to do this. I'd better go that way, like that. When you do that sort of thing, people may say you have a sixth sense or something. All it really is, though, is being sensitive to circumstances. That's just natural. It's only strange when you don't listen. One of the most convenient things about this sensitivity to circumstances is that you don't have to make so many difficult decisions. Instead, you can let them make themselves. For example, in the house at Pooh Corner, Pooh was wandering around one day trying to decide whom he wanted to visit. He could go see Eeyore, whom he hadn't seen since yesterday, or Owl, whom he hadn't seen since the day before yesterday, or Kanga, Roo, and Tigger, all of whom he hadn't seen for quite a while. How did he decide? He sat down on a rock in the middle of the stream and sang a song. Then he got up and wandered around again, thinking about visiting Rabbit, until he found himself at his own front door. He went inside, got something to eat, and then went out to see Piglet. That's how it is when you use the Pooh way. Nothing to it. No stress, no mess. Now.
A stream? Asked Pooh.
What?
The answer. A stream flows like water, reflects like a mirror.
But it doesn't respond like an echo, I said.
Yes, it does, said Pooh.
Well, you're close. Sort of, I guess.
Just give me more time, said Pooh.
The Wu-Wei approach to conflict-solving can be seen in the practice of the Taoist martial art Tai Chi Chuan, the basic idea of which is to wear the opponent out either by sending his energy back at him or by deflecting it away in order to weaken his power, balance, and position for defense. Never is force opposed with force. Instead, it is overcome with yielding.
Flows like water, reflects like a mirror, said Pooh, walking by.
You're thinking too much, Pooh, I said. I'll give you a hint. Maybe it'll help.
I hope so, said Pooh. This is beginning to bother me.
All right. To solve the riddle, you need to let your mind flow along and reflect what it sees. Then it can respond with the answer. Get it?
No, said Pooh.
Oh, well.
Let me see. Flows like water, muttered Pooh.
The Wu-Wei principle underlying Tai Chi Chuan can be understood by striking at a piece of cork floating in water. The harder you hit it, the more it yields. The more it yields, the harder it bounces back. Without expending energy, the cork can easily wear you out. So Wu-Wei overcomes force by neutralizing its power rather than by adding to the conflict. With other approaches, you may fight fire with fire, but with Wu Wei, you fight fire with water.
I know, said Pooh. A piece of cork.
What about it?
Responds like an echo, he said triumphantly.
But it doesn't flow like water, or reflect like a mirror, I said.
Oh, said Pooh, that's right.
Well, I guess I'd better tell you, I said. It's the Pooh Way.
What is?
Asked Pooh. The answer, I said.
Oh, said Pooh. That wasn't a very good riddle, he added.
All right, then you ask one.
Glad to. What's black and white and red all over?
Oh, no, not that one.
You've heard it before?
Asked Pooh, a bit surprised.
Of course. It's been around for years. Everyone knows the answer. It's a newspaper. No, said Pooh.
An embarrassed zebra?
No.
Well then,
give up?
Pooh asked hopefully.
All right, I give up. What's black and white and red all over? A sunburned penguin.
Pooh, that's stupid.
Better than yours, he said.
Well, here's another one then. It has to do with the opposite of the Pooh way. What runs around all day without getting anywhere?
A rabbit, said Pooh.
Well, practically.
Oh, I know. It's a...
But we're saving that for the next chapter.
Busy Baxon. Rabbit hurried on by the edge of the 100-acre wood, feeling more important every minute, and soon he came to the tree where Christopher Robin lived. He knocked at the door, and he called out once or twice, and then he walked back a little way and put his paw up to keep the sun out and called to the top of the tree, and then he turned all round and shouted, "Hello!" And,
"I say, it's Rabbit!"
But nothing happened. Then he stopped and listened, and everything stopped and listened with him, and the forest was very lone and still and peaceful in the sunshine, until suddenly
100 miles above him, a lark began to sing.
"Bother," said Rabbit. "He's gone out."
He went back to the green front door just to make sure, and he was turning away, feeling that his morning had got all spoilt, when he saw a piece of paper on the ground, and there was a pin in it, as if it had fallen off the door.
"Ha!"
said Rabbit, feeling quite happy again.
"Another notice!"
This is what it said. "Gone out. Baxon. Bissy. Baxon. C.R. Rabbit didn't know what a Baxon was, in spite of the fact that he is one. So he went to ask Owl. Owl didn't know either, but we think we know. And we think a lot of other people do, too. Zhuangzi described one quite accurately. There was a man who disliked seeing his footprints and his shadow. He decided to escape from them, and began to run. But as he ran along, more footprints appeared, while his shadow easily kept up with him. Thinking he was going too slowly, he ran faster and faster, without stopping, until he finally collapsed from exhaustion and died. If he had stood still, there would have been no footprints. If he had rested in the shade, his shadow would have disappeared. You see them almost everywhere you go, it seems. On practically any sunny sort of day, you can see the Baxons stampeding through the park, making all kinds of loud breathing noises. Perhaps you are enjoying a picnic on the grass, when you suddenly look up to find that one or two of them just ran over your lunch. Generally, though, you are safe around trees and grass, as Baxons tend to avoid them. They prefer instead to struggle along on asphalt and concrete, in imitation of the short-lived transportation machines for which those hard surfaces were designed. Inhaling poisonous exhaust fumes from the vehicles that swerve to avoid hitting them, the Baxons blabber away to each other about how much better they feel now that they have gotten outdoors. Natural living, they call it. The Bissy Baxon is almost desperately active. If you ask him what his life interests are, he will give you a list of physical activities, such as skydiving, tennis, jogging, racquetball, skiing, swimming, and water skiing. Is that all?
"Well, I gasp, pant, wheeze, think so," says Baxon.
"Have you ever tried chasing cars?"
No, I never have.
"How about wrestling alligators?"
"No, I always wanted to, though."
"Roller skating down a flight of stairs?"
"No, I never thought of it."
"But you said you were active." At this point, the Baxon replies thoughtfully,
"Say, do you think there's something wrong with me? Maybe I'm losing my energy."
After a while, maybe. The athletic sort of Baxon, one of the many common varieties, is concerned with physical fitness, he says. But for some reason, he sees it as something that has to be pounded in from the outside, rather than built up from the inside. Therefore, he confuses exercise with work. He works when he works, works when he exercises, and more often than not, works when he plays. Work, work, work. All work and no play makes Baxon a dull boy. Kept up for long enough, it makes him dead, too. Well, here's Rabbit. Hello, Rabbit. What's new?
"I just got back from Owl's," said Rabbit,
slightly out of breath. "Oh? He was certainly gone a long time."
"Yes, well, Owl insisted on telling me a story about his great-uncle Filbert."
"Oh, that's why."
"But anyway, Owl said that he hasn't seen the uncarved block either, but that Roo is probably playing with it, so I stopped off at Kanga's house, but no one was there."
"They're out in the forest, practicing jumps with Tigger," I said.
"Oh, well, I better get going then."
"That's all right, Rabbit, because..."
Where'd he go?
That's how it is, you know. No rest for the Baxon. Let's put it this way. If you want to be healthy, relaxed, and contented, just watch what a busy Baxon does, and then do the opposite. There's one now, pacing back and forth, jingling the loose coins in his pocket, nervously glancing at his watch. He makes you feel tired just looking at him. The chronic Baxon always seems to have to be going somewhere, at least on a superficial physical level. He doesn't go out for a walk, though. He doesn't have time.
"Not conversing," said Eeyore. "Not first one and then the other. You said hello and flashed past. I saw your tail in the distance as I was meditating my reply. I had thought of saying, 'What?' But, of course, It was then too late.
Well, I was in a hurry.
No give and take, Eeyore went on. No exchange of thought. Hello, what? I mean, it gets you nowhere, particularly if the other person's tail is only just in sight for the second half of the conversation.
The busy Baxon is always on the run, it seems. Always gone out, back soon, busy, back soon. Or more accurately, back out, gone soon, busy, gone soon. The busy Baxon is always going somewhere. Somewhere he hasn't been. Anywhere but where he is.
That's just it, said Rabbit. Where?
Perhaps he's looking for something.
What?
Asked Rabbit.
That's just what I was going to say, said Pooh. And then he added, perhaps he's looking for a...
For a reward, perhaps. Our busy Baxon religions, sciences and business ethics have tried their hardest to convince us that there is a great reward waiting for us somewhere, and that what we have to do is spend our lives working like lunatics to catch up with it. Whether it's up in the sky, behind the next molecule, or in the executive suite, it's somehow always farther along than we are, just down the road, on the other side of the world, past the moon, beyond the stars.
Ouch!
Said Pooh, landing on the floor. That's what happens when you go to sleep on the edge of the writing table, I said. You fall off.
Just as well, said Pooh.
Why's that? I asked.
I was having an awful dream, he said.
Oh?
Yes. I'd found a jar of honey, he said, rubbing his eyes.
What's awful about that? I asked.
It kept moving, said Pooh. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to sit still.
Yes, I know.
But whenever I reached for it, this jar of honey would sort of go someplace else.
A nightmare, I said. Lots of people have dreams like that, I added reassuringly.
Oh, said Pooh, about unreachable jars of honey?
About the same sort of thing, I said. That's not unusual. The odd thing, though, is that some people live like that.
Why?
Asked Pooh. I don't know, I said. I suppose because it gives them something to do.
It doesn't sound like much fun to me, said Pooh.
No, it doesn't. A way of life that keeps saying, around the next corner, above the next step, works against the natural order of things, and makes it so difficult to be happy and good that only a few get to where they would naturally have been in the first place. Happy and good. And the rest give up and fall by the side of the road, cursing the world, which is not to blame, but which is there to help show the way. Those who think that the rewarding things in life are somewhere beyond the rainbow...
Burn their toast a lot, said Pooh.
I beg your pardon?
They burn their toast a lot, said Pooh.
They... Well, yes. And not only that.
Here comes Rabbit,
said Pooh.
Oh, there you are,
said Rabbit.
Here we are,
said Pooh. Yes, here we are, I said.
And there you are,
said Pooh.
Yes, here I am, said Rabbit impatiently. To come to the point, Roo showed me his set of blocks. They're all carved and painted with letters on them.
Oh, I said.
Just the sort of thing you'd expect to see, actually, said Rabbit, stroking his whiskers thoughtfully. So, by process of elimination, he said, that means Eeyore has it.
But, Rabbit, I said, you see...
Yes, said Rabbit, I see Eeyore and find out what he knows about it. That's clearly the next step.
There he goes, said Pooh.
Looking back a few years, we see that the first busy Baxons in this part of the world, the Puritans, practically worked themselves to death in the fields without getting much of anything in return for their tremendous efforts. They were actually starving, until the wiser inhabitants of the land showed them a few things about working in harmony with the earth's rhythms. Now you plant, now you relax. Now you work the soil, now you leave it alone. The Puritans never really understood the second half,
never really believed in it. And so, after two or three centuries of pushing, pushing and pushing the once fertile earth, and a few years of depleting its energy still further with synthetic stimulants, we have apples that taste like cardboard, oranges that taste like tennis balls, and pears that taste like sweetened styrofoam, all products of soil that is not allowed to relax. We're not supposed to complain, but there it is. "Say, Pooh, why aren't you busy?" I said.
"Because it's a nice day," said Pooh.
"Yes, but..."
"Why ruin it?" he said.
"But you could be doing something important," I said.
"I am," said Pooh.
"Oh, doing what?"
"Listening," he said.
"Listening to what?"
"To the birds. And that squirrel over there."
"What are they saying?" I asked.
"That it's a nice day," said Pooh.
"But you know that already," I said.
"Yes. But it's always good to hear that somebody else thinks so too," he replied.
"Well, you could be spending your time getting educated by listening to the radio instead," I said.
"That thing?"
"Certainly. How else would you know what's going on in the world?" I said.
"By going outside," said Pooh.
Well, click. Now just listen to this, Pooh. 30,000 people were killed today when 5 jumbo airliners collided over downtown Los Angeles, the radio announced.
"What does that tell you about the world?" asked Pooh.
You're right. Click. "What are the birds saying now?" I asked.
"That it's a nice day," said Pooh.
"It certainly is, even if the Baxons are too busy to enjoy it. But to conclude our explanation of why so busy..." The hard-headed followers of the previously mentioned party-crashing, busybody religion failed to appreciate the beauty of the endless forest and clear waters that appeared before them on this fresh, green continent of the New World. Instead, they saw the paradise that was here, and the people who lived in harmony with it, as alien and threatening, something to attack and conquer, because it all stood in the way of the great reward. They didn't like singing very much either. In fact...
"What?"
said Pooh.
"No singing?"
"Pooh, I'm trying to finish this. That's right, though. No singing. They didn't like it."
"Well, if they didn't like singing, then what was their attitude towards bears?"
"I don't think they liked bears, either."
"They didn't like bears?"
"No, not very much, anyway."
"No singing, no bears. Just what did they like?"
"I don't think they liked anything, Pooh."
"No wonder things are a little confused around here," he said.
Anyway, from the miserable Puritan came the restless pioneer, and from him the lonely cowboy, always riding off into the sunset, looking for something just down the trail. From this rootless, dissatisfied ancestry has come the busy Baxon, who, like his forefathers, has never really felt at home, at peace, with this friendly land. Rigid, combative fanatic that he is, the tight-fisted Baxon is just too hard on himself, too hard on others, and too hard on the world that heroically attempts to carry on in spite of what he is doing to it. It's not surprising, therefore, that the Baxon thinks of progress in terms of fighting and overcoming. One of his little idiosyncrasies, you might say. Of course, real progress involves growing and developing, which involves changing inside, but that's something the inflexible Baxon is unwilling to do. The urge to grow and develop, present in all forms of life, becomes perverted in the busy Baxon's mind into a constant struggle to change everything, the bulldozer Baxon, and everyone, the bigoted Baxon else, but himself, and interfere with things he has no business interfering with, including practically every form of life on Earth. At least to a limited extent, his behaviour has been held in check by wiser people around him. But, like parents of hyperactive children, the wise find that they can't be everywhere at once. Babysitting the Baxons wears you out.
"Here's Rabbit again," said Pooh. "And Eeyore."
"Oh, Rabbit," I said.
"And Eeyore," said Eeyore.
"I asked Eeyore," said Rabbit.
"That's me," said Eeyore. Eeyore.
Yes, I remember, I said. I saw you just last year, out in the swamp somewhere.
Swamp, said Eeyore indignantly. It's not a swamp. It's a bog.
Swamp. Bog.
What's a bog? Asked Pooh.
If your ankles get wet, that's a bog, said Eeyore.
I see, said Pooh.
Whereas, continued Eeyore, if you sink in up to your neck, that's a swamp. Swamp, indeed, he added bitterly. Ha!
Anyway, I asked Eeyore, said Rabbit, and he said he didn't have the slightest idea